No, that's not our usual theme music you're hearing. But yes, you are tuned to Out in the Bay, Queer Radio and Podcast. I'm Eric Jansen. You're hearing music by my guests, members of Lipstick Conspiracy, the San Francisco-based all-trans female rock band that has gotten back together after almost 13 years apart. Their last previous performance was in 2010. Welcome, Serafina Maraschino, Shauna Love, and Marilyn Mitchell.
Nice to be here.
It is nice to be here.
It's fitting that you wanted me to start out with a new version of your song, Call. We've only heard the intro music so far before the lyrics start, but each verse ends with the line, "But I've got to take this call." As I understand, Lipstick Conspiracy took a call from the West Hollywood Pride Arts Festival asking you to reunite for an appearance there June 29th, and that call inspired you to get back together. So which one of you took that call?
I took the call.
Well, tell us about it, Marilyn.
I admit it. It was actually an email, I think, initially from a promoter down in L.A. who is, I guess, in charge of putting together the a festival down in West Hollywood, a Pride festival. And I was pretty shocked by the email. And I quickly noted that we hadn't been together for a number of years. And he responded by just saying, he was kind of insistent, and he just kind of said, well, just try to get it together and get back to me.
How long ago was that? Yeah. Because it was last year when my colleague Christopher Beale interviewed you.
It was after that, yeah. Okay. In fact, it was earlier this year, probably just a few months ago.
I would say April.
April.
But even then, you said you'd been, the three of you had been together doing, recording a few tracks. And
we had done stuff at the beginning of last year. So the call from this guy kind of inspired us to think about doing it and then also thinking about the long term.
So when Stephen Luca from WeHo Pride Film Festival got in touch with Marilyn, and really, she's right, he was persistent. It was just like, okay, so what about, and just kept going. And ultimately, that was how it started. And that really forced us to really kind of talk about our future. You know, I mean, it's easy to say like, well, let's just do 5 songs or 6 songs, and then, you know, we'll try this again in 10 years. We actually decided to commit because it was pretty obvious right away that we were all pretty energized. I guess that's excited. Mm-hmm. Well, it started engendering conversations about the future, and we decided that if we're going to do this, let's just do it.
Briefly, what was the heyday of Lipstick Conspiracy back in the early 2000s? Did you tour a lot? How many cities did you play in? That kind of thing. Just give the listeners a sense of what that was like.
Oh, my God.
Go for it.
We rocked. We rocked. We did this thing called mini skirts and mini bars or something like that. And we went from as far south as Hollywood, San Diego, even San Diego. Yeah, we did San Diego Pride. Mm-hmm. And as far north as like Seattle, Portland, Tacoma, way up there, and Eugene, yeah.
West Coast mostly.
Yeah, all over. Mm-hmm. And we did every Pride. Any weird town that had a Pride, we played them, and we played venues and bars and clubs.
Right. It was going on. Yeah. I remember seeing you once or twice back in the must have been mid, late 2000s, probably at the Eagle at some point and somewhere outdoors, but I don't remember exactly where. Mm-hmm. And the music was like, boom, driving. Yeah. So let's hear a little bit more of the song Call. Let's talk about Call for a second, because we did just play that. What is it in this song, Call, "But I've Got to Take This Call," comes at the end of every verse. What does that refer to?
Urgency, and recognizing finally that and here I am explaining the lyrics of because I actually wrote those lyrics, and the idea that, you know, we're supposed to let others interpret, but I've heard a lot of different interpretations of it, but for me it's always been about the urgency, that it's like it's time to just let's do this. And that can be really, for me it's always been, it's an urgency relating to transition. And for me, that was what most of what the song is about, at least as far as where the lyrics come from. But yet I've heard some interesting interpretations, even dark stuff, even like, you know, like, is this your suicide letter? It's like, really? Good Lord, no, that's not what I'm saying at all. But okay, if that's your interpretation, that's interesting.
So one of the verses is, I've reinvented myself, changed to be someone else, pursued scarcity and wealth, always anticipating the fall, but I've got to take this call. So yeah, that certainly sounds like reinventing yourself. That's pretty clear.
You know, it's news to me. I never heard this interpretation before. I just played it.
Okay. I think this is a good time to play one of your songs, early songs, that was kind of one of the big songs for Lipstick Conspiracy, Just a Girl. And so let's play a little bit of that. So tell us a little bit about your thoughts behind that song as you wrote it and the other two of you as you played it.
Well, I guess I can claim responsibility for that.
Your name's on it.
You know, I knew as we started the group that we needed to write our own stuff. Sarah actually had most of the material early on, and I had been writing songs pretty much all my life. I think the lyrics are kind of reflective of where my head was at the time, just kind of like going through transition and a bit whimsical, but it caught the spirit of how I was feeling at the time. And I have to say also about this same time, I had seen Hedwig and the Angry Inch, not only the movie, but it also came to San Francisco as a play. And I did some volunteer work for that. It was kind of inspirational. If anybody knows the storyline, I won't go into it, but it was inspirational for me to know that, wow, a connection between who you are as a transitioning woman to being able to play music also. And I go, whoa, it just hit me really hard. And then the music also kind of inspired me. I wrote most of the music, but then I noticed that there was something needed at the end, and I added a little kind of a bridgey thing at the end, like no other at the end there. And I kind of got that from Hedwig. And
you know, the lyrics in here are, you know, as we just heard some of it. Some people ask me why I dress this way, a crazy drag queen, or perhaps your gaze, or point to all these fancy clothes, and is there something you're trying to prove? And, you know, it's like, no, I'm just trying to be the best girl I can be. And I'm curious about how that has changed from the mid, you know, like 2004 or 5 or whenever it was that you wrote this, to now, we're almost 20 years later. And we've had some advances, but we're certainly facing some troubles now. Serafina.
Well, I think in the early days, one of the things that was, we always tried to avoid the obvious. We were all musicians and songwriters, and so the idea of actually, everybody knew we were trans. We knew that we were trans. In fact, we actually were billed. Robert Irvin called us America's premier trans band. We stole that as, I said, well, yeah, well, we'll take that. So it was a matter of acknowledging our transness, but also not acknowledging it. I mean, again, it was very obvious. Now it feels completely different because we've all grown substantially. And now it feels more like, I don't want to say I need to remind people, but I've gone through that. I also don't say anything for work purposes. I don't have to talk about it. And yet now, because it seems like our community is completely, well, under siege nationwide, it feels a lot different. And the idea of a song like Just a Girl in the early days was very much celebratory. You know, we're, you know, here we are, yay. and now it feels more like it's, it almost seems frivolous and in the way of something when we're thinking survival, but yet that's exactly why its anthemic properties, I think, are critical because it really is a reminder of how things were.
And did it feel like it was political then that just the very sheer act of you performing in public and obviously trans and billed as a trans band in a different way than it would be now?
Absolutely. In those days, we used to say things like when we were introduced, I always had to write the card as far as, you know, introducing you. What do you got to say? What do you got to say? And so we would introduce ourselves as, John Ashcroft's favorite band, who was, of course, the Attorney General in 2000. Because it was just funny. Because the idea that somebody like John Ashcroft would even remotely know who we are, nobody would care. But the idea of the, you know, the G-Men, the bumbling, you know, Watergate, burglars kind of chasing us around was kind of a nice image. We were smarter than them and so forth. But I had said in some interview that our very nature is political because when we walk on stage, the assumption that we were, quote, drag queens versus we were trans women really kind of drew a line, and a good one. But now we were talking at one point about if we actually went to Nashville, for example, and performed a gig, it would definitely be political because it would be basically an act of resistance. We'd be arrested. Mm-hmm. And just talking about it and saying we should go to Nashville and perform a gig, by definition, is a conspiracy.
Now, wait a minute. Is it illegal for trans people to perform or is it illegal for people to perform in drag?
Well, that's exactly what would be the political act that would come out of all of that. Right. As far as what does it even merely mean? Because I don't think in Tennessee they're going to say, no. They're legit. The idea that there isn't room for interpretation in there is exactly what makes this dangerous.
Right.
And to find that out while you're sitting, you know, in a Nashville jail trying to get your lawyer on the phone, that's another story, I guess. Mm-hmm.
That's quite a wild image. You know, I kind of envision being dragged into jail and me yelling out, you know, I'm not a drag queen.
We may have to change the lyrics to Just a Girl after all.
So how did you end up in Shauna, you're from the Bay Area.
Yes.
And Sarah, you're from Stockton. And you're from a farther away. I don't know exactly where.
Way back east, Ohio.
So how did you end up all in the city? And I mean, do you want to talk a little bit about what it was like being a, I don't know, teenager or young adult where you were in those times?
Sure.
Wants to go first. Let's again. Go. I can see
we'll
the look on your face.
We'll go in this order. Yeah.
Yeah, I've lived all over the Bay Area, including San Francisco for a while. I've always gravitated towards music, and I've always wanted to be a musician of some caliber, the best I could be. I think just, you know, following the music, following wherever I could be involved in some music. I don't know. I've just always played, and I always loved playing. And then Sarah gave me that call. There you go again, you know. And
so, Serafina, what prompted you moving from Stockton? What was it like growing up in Stockton?
You have no idea. I actually grew up in a farm in between Stockton and Manteca, and then my parents moved to the foothills in my junior year of high school. But ultimately, I burned a couple of years trying to go to college and then join the service so I could get my GI Bill. I lived in Europe, and during that time frame, I pretty much decided, again, back to, you know, taking the call, I needed to move to the Bay Area. I wanted to go to Berkeley. That was my thing. And so I basically just made that my plan. I knew that there was really no way I was going to pursue what I thought I needed to do living anywhere else. So there was a draw to San Francisco. And after finishing college, I took an internet job and then ultimately transitioned, band, and career, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Marilyn, so, what about you?
Well, I grew up in Ohio, and very much like probably all of us, very interested in music since I was at least, 13 when I first got my first guitar, I think. And so I've always played in, you know, with other people or in a few bands, even back in high school and stuff like that. And then as I grew up, I got attracted to academia. And so I went that route and eventually got to a point where I was offered a job here in San Francisco at San Francisco State about 1998 or something like that. And it wasn't, and I wasn't in a band, of course, just learning the ropes. Didn't even know much about San Francisco, to be honest. But the transition thing for me was starting. It was kind of late in my life, but I knew something was percolating. And it was almost just about that time where I met Shauna and Serafina. So it was like also a big support group for me personally. So yes. It was in addition to the music. We were best friends.
Yeah. Right. And
the band is a support group. Marilyn's 100% correct.
Yeah.
Because I doubt I would have been able to transition without having the support, because we were onto something. And it was kind of, you know, when you're looking at that whole dynamic as far as one thing pulling the other, I mean, you know, who's pulling what or what's pulling who? It was a tremendous opportunity, and it just felt natural. It's mm-hmm. like, this is the way this is going to go.
But it took a while the transition to actually occur per se. I mean, I had basically a double life at work, you know, work during the day at school and then at nighttime go to band practice.
Yep.
And we kind of, in a way, I guess all of us had something like that early on. But then eventually I came out at work and, you know, that was it. And, yeah.
And at least you were in San Francisco, so that was kind of okay. You would talk kinesiology at SF State,
right? Yeah, that's
right.
Yeah.
Just retire.
And I just, I came here in 97, so I just put in 20 years or whatever. And I decided to retire. So here I am.
So is it time to play Locked Away?
I think so.
Yeah.
What do you think, Shauna?
Sure.
Time for Shauna to do some.
Is this yours?
I can't take 100% credit, but I birthed it. I could say that.
Okay, fair enough. Let's hear it.
I could say that.
Seen the day.
First of all, who's singing theirs?
Me.
Great. Mm-hmm. And I wondered if it might be you. Did you write most of it or all of it?
The concept, yes. I just had this vision of, you know, trying to be yourself and how hard it is to be yourself, trans or otherwise, being young, being, you know, trying to find your path and feeling like there's so many obstacles, mm-hmm. and constantly just struggling, you know, to find your way for trans, straight, or anything, you know, whatever. And,
yeah.
And that was the concept of the song. And I wanted to write something about that that spoke to that. And Serafina, being the wordsmith that she is, I don't know. I seem to recall a little bit of pushback from her from some of the words that I had come up with. And she was like, can I help you with that? And I was like, yeah, let's do it. And we sat down and we wrote that in like, it seemed like 15 minutes. Okay. It just came.
Oh, that's great.
And yeah, we all sat down, you know, and at Marilyn's house, and we wrote that at Marilyn's house in her living room. And it was amazing. Yeah.
So, well, I'm just one of these verses I want to read. Somewhere upstairs until someone dares, creaking boards that lead to yesterday, secrets in chests, memories laid to rest, and clocks that only tell time twice a day. What's the twice a day part about?
It's a broken clock. So it's an attic.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Secrets in chests. I mean, that can be the heart.
Oh, right.
Or in the attic, okay. You know.
Yeah. Skeletons in the closet kind of thing.
Shauna's metaphor was basically all about the, you know, attics and, you know, dusts and cobwebs and creaking stairs. Floor. And that was what she was looking at. Like, this is something that's locked away.
Right.
And, you know, we can either.
And shouldn't be,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
And shouldn't be. That's the whole thing. It's about your own identity and your life. Mm-hmm. It should not be, absolutely should not be locked away, but sometimes it is.
That's,
I really like it.
I love playing that song. I don't even sing at all in this. And I,
yeah,
I
we really, got to talk about that.
I really enjoy playing it. So,
so last thing is, so what are your plans for the coming year?
I believe that we wanted to do this gig down in LA, at the end of this month and kind of reassess. At that point, we don't know what's going to happen. Maybe nothing will happen as a result of that in terms of being contacted or whatever. Like Sarah was saying earlier, that's certainly been our history of being contacted because of what we're doing. But we don't know that right now. That will have some bearing, I think. But even if we don't get contacted, I think there's this new spirit, I think, that will likely keep us going for a while. How we do it, I don't know for sure. You know, and
I agree. Just to piggyback on what Marilyn was saying, Serafina has stated that, like, no one may care about us any longer because, you know, it's been a long time. But I feel like, you know, who cares? I want to play music because I want to play music. And if I don't get written up in the paper because of it, that's okay with me because I do it because I love playing music.
And if you're enjoying it, it'll come through and people will enjoy seeing it and listening to it.
Right.
Well, that's right. Well, yes, we agree. I mean, we enjoy playing together and that's something that has always been, it's a joy working with these two. I never had a problem bragging that, you know, I'm in a band with some of the best musicians in the Bay Area, you know. I used to say things like, you know, even when on our card, you know, for introduction, referring to ourselves as the Mighty Lipstick Conspiracy. Sean always thought that was egotistical, and I'm like, I know it is. But, you know, it's, you know, the idea here is that these two are incredible musicians, you know, and I don't consider myself to be a slouch in any way, but these two
they're
are hands down.
Part of what we do is what Sarah does.
And I think in an email exchange that we had a few weeks ago, Marilyn, that you had said that part of the inspiration to stick together is also like to give a little bit of an antidote, a little bit of a joyful antidote, hopefully sometime, for all the anti-trans, anti-queer, anti-gay stuff that's going on now.
Right. Absolutely. We have a legacy, and, you know, it's if appreciation of that advances anything or reminds people, you know, now's the time. And that's important to me. It's important to these two. And to piggyback off of what Marilyn was saying, you know, we'll see what everybody says after the Hollywood gig. I mean, we're ready, I believe. It's just we need more time. And in 5 months, we're going to be even stronger. We start talking about new things to write as well, topics, stuff.
Okay.
So,
Anything else you want to add, or that we didn't cover that you want to let people
know
about?
I'll say one more thing. Being in Lipstick Conspiracy was really special because at a time when, you know, you're transitioning and you don't really know what lies ahead, and then to have your dream of playing music and being in a band and playing with people that you can play with, that which is a feat in itself, and then to find that and then connect that with something in your identity of who you are, being a trans person, and have that all balled into one thing, I cannot emphasize how huge that experience was and is. But at that time, you know, in those early days, it was just amazing to live your life as who you are, wrapped up in your dream of being a musician, and then having the success of what we had. It was just, I can't express how amazing.
It sounds fantastic.
Yeah.
Really
truly
does.
A dream, yeah.
Yeah, I second it. I mean,
I third it.
It's a big part of my resume. I mean, I was able to, I mean, it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. So let's go out with, we'll go out with one song instead of our usual theme song. You do times three. Is that, did I miss saying that right?
Well, it's, you know, do, you know, like the humming.
Do.
And so we just put it on there as do times three because it just looked funny that way. And then it's actually, I still refer to it as U-Docs. It's a quintessentially Shauna song, in my opinion. It's brilliant.
Thank you all so much for being here. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
You just heard U-Docs 3 by Lipstick Conspiracy. My guests have been Marilyn Mitchell, Shauna Love, and Serafina Maraschino. I'm Eric Jansen. You've been hearing Out in the Bay, Queer Radio, and Podcast. If you want to hear more about Lipstick Conspiracy and their upcoming concerts, find their music and info at lipstickconspiracy.com. Out in the Bay, by the way, is an independent nonprofit production. Please help us keep bringing queer air to your ears. A donation of any amount at outinthebay.org, where you can also hear past shows and subscribe to our podcast and occasional emails. That's outinthebay.org. Thank you. Big thanks to Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley for their generous support. We'll thank you on the air only if you say it's okay. Special thanks this month to San Francisco Public Press and its radio station KSFP, in whose studios we recorded this week's show, and to our studio engineer, KSFP station manager Mel Baker. David Kwan is our sound designer and audio editor for this edition. Thank you, David. I'm Eric Jansen. So glad you could join us out in the Bay at outinthebay.org. I wish you'd find something better to do.